The secret knowledge, that is the canto which has been. We'll share things from that today. Now, this is part of book one, which is the book of beginnings. Beginnings means Sri Aurobindo is laying down all the foundations of what's going to happen. And in that, first two cantos, one and two, is he is giving us the backdrop and he is introducing Savitri to us. From third canto, he is, the story goes in flashback. And the flashback is that how Savitri came into birth. So the third canto starts with a world's desire compelled her mortal birth. Then who embodied that anguish and desire of the earth is Ashwapati. So we have Ashwapati's introduction, one in the front of the immemorial quest, and it goes on. So canto, book 1, canto 3, 4 and 5 are the initial realizations of Ashwapati, which are the realizations of Sri Aurobindo, based on which we have the whole supramental yoga opening up. So canto 3 is yoga of the king, yoga of the soul's release. This is mandatory. It's common to all yogas. Now, there are different ways the experience comes, but here Sri Aurobindo describes the penultimate experience. This is a state of constant peace, constant joy. You are above the dualities, you are above the conflicts. All that is described in canto 3. Now, once he experiences this freedom of the soul, the beauty is Ashwapati does not stop there. Let's put Sri Aurobindo. So what Sri Aurobindo sees is a new possibility opening before him. Ordinarily, once you are freed from the, and we take this example that you are living in a place which is quite a, you know, you have mixed bag of good and bad, pleasure and pain. And then you step out and you discover, you know, I am free. But here, Sri Aurobindo sees that this mixed bag, this world of ignorance, there is a greater, higher supernature which can change this world. That we see in Canto 5, the spirit's freedom and greatness. And Canto 4, the secret knowledge, he has sort of given a summary of the realizations he had in, which are described in Canto 3 and Canto 5. So why is it called secret knowledge? Because our ordinary instrument, the mind as it stands today and the senses, cannot have access to it. So if the mind tries to understand it by philosophizing or reasoning, it cannot have access to that knowledge. It will see the doors closed, then it will enter into speculation, maybe, may not be, always it will hang. But then there is a way to access that knowledge. That's how Ashwapati has accessed this knowledge. First access code is freedom from ignorance. That's very clear. You can't have the secret knowledge unless you have got free from ignorance, you have discovered your soul, because the soul can access what the mind cannot. So in the Western metaphysics, mind is ultimate. So they confuse mind with the spirit, soul, everything, all is jumbled up in one. But in Indian thought and experience, soul is distinct from the mind. Its way of operating, its way of understanding, vision, everything is different. So Ashwapati has discovered this freedom, and hence he is able to access into this secret knowledge. It's literally a term in the Vedas. So often I say, if you read this canto is a standalone canto, where all the major findings, discoveries of Ashwapati, he is sharing with us, findings which we cannot by our own mind and limited intelligence or by our senses, we cannot access it. So we'll plunge into what has he discovered. So it's an exciting field of discovery. Like a scientist, Ashwapati is sharing his discoveries, and the intention is so that we understand there is so much more which we don't know, and we too can start on the great journey with him. So, the secret knowledge, and the very first line is very fascinating. First three or four lines. Page 60, page 46. Please. Yeah, please come. It's such a marvelous canto, actually. We'll, of course, not be able to read everything, but it is just amazing. It's like you feel like picking up everything. Ashwapati is Savitri's father. I mean, technically speaking, he is actually a seer in the Upanishad. His story is described. But here, Sri Aurobindo has used Ashwapati to give his own experiences, just like Savitri is the mother's experiences. So we have these first four lines. On a height he stood that looked towards greater heights. So this explains many things. People often say, but why did certain sages didn't speak about it? So its typical example is where we see Swami Vivekananda showing the passage to Sri Aurobindo, which is often misunderstood at that, you know, he guided him. No, it is like Swami Vivekananda has reached the height of the intuitive plane where the Vedic seers had reached. From there they could see there is something greater, much greater. Yajnavalk, Hiranmayena Patrena Satyasyapihitam Mukham. He is able to see that the face of truth is covered with a golden lid. He says, what we call as truth is not truth at all. It's a world of falsehood in which we live. But there is a law of truth. And he says, I want to see your face. I pour your rays upon me. But he is able to see but not enter there. So Swami Vivekananda, on a height, he stands and he points. There is something much greater. This is what you are seeking. This is what will... Because he knows the aspiration. So now Sri Aurobindo stands on that height. On a height he stood that looked towards greater heights. Our early approaches to the infinite are sunrise splendors on a marvelous verge, while lingers yet unseen the glorious sun. We are very happy with the dawn, but noon is taxing, the full orb of the sun. So this is the beginning, and then we see some of these things which he has discovered, beautiful ones. Few lines below. This world is a beginning and a base, where life and mind erect their structured dreams. An unborn power must build reality. So what we have developed till now is only a beginning and a base. But see, that's where the human mind's arrogance, that no, we know it all. No, sir, you are still the little plant. The fruits and the flowers are yet to come. And he uses the word unborn reality, something which is there, a great power, which has not yet come. That must build reality. So what are these, all this we call as reality? This is figures of reality often distorted. So this is the difference between the Mayavad of Shankara and Sri Aurobindo's writings, that Mayavad Shankara, this is illusion, where you can relate with it on a behavaric level, practically. But Sri Aurobindo says it's not an illusion, it's a distortion. So what we are experiencing today is not reality, but distortions of reality, like you see through a fragmented mirror. So mind and the senses are the fragmented mirror. So whatever we are seeing through that is not reality, but a distortion of reality. So the greater power must come and arrange things in a way, give the right touch. So this is one of that. And then he, you know, let's read the last five lines. I'll go from, you know, skip. I'll have to skip. Otherwise, this is a very big. Now, this is a very reassuring line. Because many of us may say, all this is very nice. We don't know. And even if we have little glimpse by the grace, there are so many people in the world. They are not going to, you know, ever probably come in contact with Savitri, let alone progress. And that's the majority. So here are these lines, five lines from below. Even when we fail to look into our souls, or lie embedded in earthly consciousness, till have we parts that grow towards the light. I think, source of all hope. Why? Because divine is in all of us. So I often use this image that you are traveling in a plane or the train or in a car, and you go to sleep, and then you dream. What are you dreaming of? You are dreaming of all the images. You are going to a new place. You really don't know what that new place is, but you are dreaming of things happen, maybe even a nightmare or whatever it is. And then you reach, and suddenly your eyes open. Well, you will reach because there is a driver who is carrying you. He knows the way, and that driver is the divine within. So that driver is the divine. So even when we fail, we don't know. And this comes repeatedly. In one of the lines in Savitri, Shobindu says, how shall the end be vain when God is guide? The end be vain when God is guide. So either we have to say that there is divine guide, in which case the world has a divine destiny. Or else we have to say there is no divine. That's a different story altogether. Okay, so then he describes passingly that there are so many realms beyond, and we don't know, but they call us. And because they call us, man always wants to create something beautiful here, but he doesn't know how. There are realms within, above, which he doesn't know, but we all want to have some perfection here. So your house is one of the ways to build perfection in material life. Ishavasyam. That's what I'm saying. So why? Because something in the mind always wants to conceive something very beautiful and wants to manifest, but we don't know how. Yes, so that's because one reaches a point. But generally, even in a person who doesn't know anything about, he also wants a perfect life, but he doesn't know what it really means. Yes, absolutely. Yes, he doesn't understand. But because there is a perfection hidden within, he is always attracted toward that. And perfection not only in material building, in everything, in human relationship, in your ways of life, in everything you want. You don't want disease, you don't want this process of dying, degeneration. Because there is the immortal divine element within us. And then there is a brief description of why Ashwapati, that is Sri Aurobindo, could enter. Now we know that Sri Aurobindo's yoga is not described in Savitri. Mother's yoga is described. So why Sri Aurobindo had this access, if you read, see his life. Suddenly Sri Krishna comes, picks him up, he goes through those transmuting experiences. Now he goes further, beyond where the avatar of the Dwapar has gone. So why? Because he is picked up. So there are always chosen ones. The divine descent, Sri Aurobindo is one of them. And he has been picked up for revealing this knowledge. Of course, there is a past behind and yogas, how he has been chosen. But that is not revealed to us here. All that we are told on page 47 is, sometimes the inescapable mystery, inexpressible mystery, you can't express it. Sometimes elects a human vessel of descent. A breath comes down from a supernal ear. A presence is born. A guiding light awakes. A stillness falls upon the instruments. And toward the end we see there are several experiences which are described, which come as a result of the divine grace. All of them, how sometimes you experience the force, descent of force, sometimes you experience that deep stillness and peace within, sometimes knowledge opens its doors and rivers of knowledge pour in, sometimes you are possessed by the divine and a greater divine being picks you up for his own work, and so on and so forth. And then we have those wonderful line, last three lines from below, in moments when the inner lamps are lit and the life's cherished guests are left outside. Cherished guests, all desires, thoughts, fancies. Our spirit sits alone and speaks to its gulfs. This is what we should cherish and try to more and more And then what happens? How this secret knowledge comes? So that's how it is described. A wider consciousness opens then its doors, invading from spiritual silences. A ray of the timeless glory stoops awhile to commune with her seized, illumined clay and leaves its huge stamp, huge white stamp upon our lives. And then certain signs are described. How that glory. Now comes one of the first findings. He is sharing his discoveries with us. The first thing that the Vedic rishis worship, no? Kasme devaye havisha videham. And they came to whether Vayu, Agni, which? And they come up with Agni. Agni is the first Godhead. It is Jata Vedas. It knows all the births. It helps us to progress. Then Vayu, Maruts, then Indra. It will take us to Indra, who won't let us go easily. So that's the whole story. But first he describes what is this Agni inside. So we have few lines from below. A grace and beauty of spiritual light. The murmuring tongue of a celestial fire. That's it. Ourself. Yeah, I don't have the lines here. The murmuring tongue of a celestial fire. Murmuring tongues. You see, Sri Aurobindo's writings are so beautiful. So fire, you describe it as a tongue, you know, leaping. And why it is tongue? Because it consumes. So the image is perfect image. So fire consumes all things. It's a tongue which reaches out and consumes. And whatever it consumes, it refines, purifies, uplifts. See every time before the February and this thing. But you know, I get in the bargain many strepsils and all this. So it's a murmuring tongue. So it's a fire that speaks to us. It is and acts unseen as if it were not. Now it's so beautiful. Our life takes strange steps. Destiny moves along lines. Suddenly we had planned one thing and it turns in another direction. And we don't know why, how. Because deep within this soul element is operating. Everybody's experience, I'm sure. It follows the line of sempiternal birth. It follows the line of sempiternal birth. Yet seems to perish with the mortal frame. So if you want to understand the secret of what's happening with us today, we have to understand what happened in the lives we have left behind and lives that are yet to come. We don't have access to that. But one of the things that happens when we discover the soul is that we discover those fragments of those lives. And then we see it makes sense how Mother describes many of her experiences. One of them when she is Queen of Egypt, Catherine of Russia, then some of Sri Aurobindo's lives. And we all, when we have touched this soul, we can discover some of those lives of our own. So it has the secret. Yet, when you give the body to fire or the grave, it seems ki it has gone. But actually, it carries the essence through the life, soul essence. Assured of the apocalypse to be, it reckons not the moments and the hours. So, it knows that one day the grand disclosure of the divine will take place. So, one of the things that happens when we discover the soul is that we are no more restless. When will this happen? How this will happen? We know that it is going to happen. Awaiting, great, patient, calm, it sees the centuries pass, awaiting the slow miracle of a change. In the sure, deliberate process of world force and the long march of all revealing time. So this is the soul which is discovered. And Shubindu says, it is the origin and the master clue, a silence overhead, an inner voice, a living image seated in the heart, an unwalled wideness and a fathomless point. So though this is the only point from where we can enter into the universal. If we break free into the universal consciousness through the mind or heart or the life, we may enter into cosmic ignorance, which can be very dangerous. But if we enter to the universal through the soul, then we are safe because we enter into cosmic truth. And the truth of all these cryptic shows in space, the real towards which our strivings move. So why Arjuna is chosen? Why not Yudhishthir, the truthful? Why not Vidur, the Mahatma? Why not Karna? All these people, why Arjuna is chosen? Arjuna asked this question. Sir, why me? For this ghoram karmam. And then Sri Krishna says, you know what? We have been together for ages. You don't know it, but I remember it. Something similar when Charu Chandra Dutt wrote to Sri Aurobindo. He says that, well, he didn't write. Actually, Dilip Kumar Roy connected. Do you know Charu? He has been talking about you, and he used to call him chief when he was in the revolutionary movement. But he was very angry that chief has left and gone away. So he had that, carrying this grouse. But Abhiman. Later on, he discovered that that's a different. So Dilip Kumar Roy passingly asked him, do you remember Charu? He says, yes, of course. He is one of those, exact sentence I don't remember, but in the front rank of humanity. And somebody with whom I have fought the battle of the ages. And in this life, my own preoccupations, I could call him so far. Now when this letter goes to Charu, he starts crying. And his wife tells him, I had told you, write to him. You were hesitant. Shobindo knows, remembers, knows him that not only this life I know him, we have fought together the battle of the ages. And then of course he comes and the rest is history. So it is this which carries that secret, the real towards which our strivings move, the secret grandiose meaning of our lives. So many people nowadays, they go through this problem, existential crisis. They don't know what their life is meant for and unfortunately take devious turns. But there is a meaning and a purpose, but it lies within our souls. And what a wonderful description. You would remember in Kathopanishad, there are various ways that Yama explains to Nachiketa that what is it you are seeking? In the center of the heart, that core, the immortality, secret of immortality, a treasure of honey in the combs of God. Madhuvada. Even Kena Upanishad speaks of that. And one of the things that you experience the moment you touch the soul is sweetness. And this sweetness is not that outer sweetness, how are you, sir? None of that. It's something very natural, like a flower's fragrance or sweetness. It is automatic. So, mother's sweetness. A treasure of honey in the combs of God, a splendor burning in a tenebrous cloak. So this cloak of the body and mind, they conceal it. Yet it is burning. You can feel that warmth. It is our glory of the flame of God. Our golden fountain of the world's delight. You want to be happy? Get in touch with this. All other means of happiness, they are transient, temporary. They'll go away. So this is the place, finding the soul, sweetness, warmth, love, joy, peace, all this come very naturally. It's a package. Find your soul and get all the rest. An immortality cowled in the cape of death, the shape of our unborn divinity. And that contains the scroll of our destiny. It guards for us our fate in depths within. where sleeps the eternal seed of transient things. So ways he is describing it. Always, and this is so marvelous. So, destiny is not outer events. Some people say, oh, if the soul chooses fate, why would it choose such a fate where you are suffering? Suffering is for the ego. The soul may well accept that fate because it knows that when the ego is crucified, it purifies our being. So, soul may choose even poverty. It may choose very paradoxical experiences. So, because it guards the fate, it will make sure whatever means, it will ultimately come out. And then, always, we bear in us a magic key, concealed in life's hermetic envelope, a burning witness in the sanctuary, regards through time and the blind walls of form. A timeless light is in his hidden eyes. He sees the secret things, knows words can speak, and knows the goal of the unconscious world and the heart of the mystery of the journeying year. So this is the first discovery. But always we'll see, Sri Aurobindo will connect it with how we experience life. So you'll see next passages, but all is screened, subliminal, mystical. It needs the intuitive heart, the inward turn. It needs the power of a spiritual gaze, else to our waking mind's small moment look, a goalless void seems our dubious course. Some chance has settled or hazarded some will. So if you look at life outwardly, this is how he sees. So all that he describes, he always says, yes, yes, I know what you people feel. How you feel it. But this is the truth I am revealing to you. So Sri Aurobindo knows both these things. Yeah, that's enough. Yeah. No, not needed. Whatever. Yeah, it's fine. And then he reveals something very beautiful. So when we look at life, there is a paradox. Paradox is, we all say there is God within, or God governing the world, so called. But when you look at world, you begin to doubt. Suffering, evil, what kind of, if this is governance, you say, well, probably, you know, you take a back seat. There's a movie on that, Bruce Almighty. But there they try to justify it. It's not that. There is a reason why this paradox and why there is a sanction to this paradox. So that comes, God's sanction to the paradox of life and the riddle of the immortal's birth in time. Now he reveals that there is a yoga going on in earth. And it is very symbolic. Earth is going around the sun. It goes through all the seasons. And it looks like it is repeating the course. So new year comes again. But what we forget is, though every day changes, basic things are the same. Yet we have moved one step forward. Through the day and the night, through the changing of the seasons, we are moving forward. So this is what the earth knows, and Sri Aurobindo describes it through a serpentine process. So there is this within earth, so we are also in one level creatures of the earth, and through us, earth speaks, earth aspires. So this is why she has so happy that man has come now. So she awaits what will come beyond man. Man is the instrument through which, who is supposed to be the bridge between the higher truth and the lower. That's why, that's the story of Sita, no? She is Bhumija. So what does she carry in her? The anguish of all the sages. And see, there is a very beautiful, just a little aside, huh? Because we mentioned about Sita Mata. Must have heard about Lakshman Rekha. Okay, it's not in Valmiki Ramayana, but there in Ramcharitmanas. It's very interesting. People draw a conclusion that, see, if you cross the Lakshman Rekha, there will be problem. But Mother Sita is a divine mother. She crosses the Lakshman Rekha. Why? had she not crossed the Lakshman Rekha, the Vanaras of Kiskindha and the Rakshasas of, you know, Lanka would have remained the same. No evolution. She crosses the boundary and lo and behold, she goes all the way to Lanka. Gives a chance to them to convert. Vibhishan accepts the story of conversion of the Asura. And so does Ravan. And she gives a chance for the Vanara who are restless, busy.
Focus.
Yes, to be focused and change. Because they also evolve.
Consciously.
So this is how it operates. So she carries the evolution of the earth. She is the one. And so far as she can carry, she carries. Then she goes back to earth. That's what. I mean, that now evolution is now established in the core. It will come back again. So this is what is described, the yoga of the earth, which Sri Krishna hints in the Gita that Arjun, you are not the first person receiving the yoga. I gave it first to Vivaswan. That's what triggered the avatarhood principle. Vivaswan is Surya, but Surya in a certain mode. And Vivaswan gave to Manu. And Manu gave to Ikshvaku, Rama's dynasty, Suryavanshi. So he says, what are you saying? I can't understand the head or tail of it. So this is what is meant, that there is a yoga of the earth going on. Manu is man. Sun and the earth, they come together and give rise to man, the thinker, Manu. And then you have the lineage of kings who are guarding this yoga, carrying on. So always upon earth, there have been beings who have been custodians of the earth's destiny, one way or the other. And they have carried the evolution forward to whatever extent they were meant to carry. Because ultimately it is material nature which is evolving through all this. The brain is evolving to become an instrument fit to manifest the higher consciousness. So we see this whole story.
This yoga of the material nature transforming is brought on earth by Sri Aurobindo. So previous to him,
it is led to the... Yes, so it has been led to finality. But when Mother describes her experience of the Hydra, 26 November 19... 15 or something. Then Sri Aurobindo puts a note there. This is the original Vedic experience of earth uniting with the Supreme. But the modern Vedic seers have forgotten about it, or scholars, and they would never admit its possibility.
So where does Mother describe? Because we can
read it. In prayers and meditations.
Prayers and meditations.
Yes, the yoga of the earth uniting with the Supreme.
Supreme.
Ultimate.
Sun.
Yeah, yeah. Sun is a symbol.
This, what did you say, sorry? What,
yeah.
Prayers and meditations.
Prayer dated November 26th. And it's 1915 or 16. But that you will see, because there won't be many prayers of 26th November. So Sri Aurobindo is a footnote. So it has been there. You see the story of Shiva and Parvati. Again, material nature, the Shivalingam. But it's at a different level. It doesn't take place right here, but some aspects of material nature. So the effort has been there. As I said, Ramayana, Sri Krishna, when he speaks of Lok Sangraharth, what does it mean? March of mankind, in which the liberated man participates, he himself. So there is a process of evolution going on, and there are some who become participant in that process. But where is it going, to what great consummation? Nobody tells us. Especially because post Sri Krishna, we forgot the original Sanatana Dharma. We came to all the Mayavad. So we forgot that whatever it may have been necessary, post-Buddhist, we forgot. So Sri Aurobindo is at one level connecting with the original aspiration. At another level, he is carrying it to the fulfillment. And there he says a greater power must build reality. The aspiration of the ages can only be fulfilled by the supramental power directly descending upon earth. So all this he describes, the yoga of the earth. And toward the end, how beautifully he sanctions it. Page 51. What does she seek? Okay, fifth line from above. Or fourth line. And this about earth. Earth is conscious. She has a consciousness. We don't need to learn that we have to, you know, that's why sometimes, you know, ki now earth may, this may happen, that may happen. It's inbuilt in Sanatana Dharma. Earth is a goddess. But in Mayavad, we forgot it. That's where the problem came. But you must be knowing, when we woke up as a child, we were taught to first touch the earth.
First touch the earth and then, yes. Then do the pranam.
Yes, you don't get down from the bed until you have touched the earth. She was always a goddess. Even now, dancers in India, they'll first touch the earth. So she's a living being. So what is she seeking? Look at these lines. Ignorant and wary and invincible. I mean, see the magic of the words. She doesn't know earth, that, you know, this about earth. Page 51. 51.
Fourth line.
She's ignorant. It's like a person who says, I want something, but I don't know what I want. Or how I will get it. She wants perfection, but she doesn't know how. So she is ignorant.
So she is earth.
Earth. Here it is earth, because it's different places she and he will be different. So if you go back to the lines behind, you will see he is describing the earth goddess toiling. So she is tired because six pralayas, weary, but invincible, refuses to give up. What wonderful lines. We as children of earth should at least have this. Ignorant and wary and invincible. She seeks through the soul's war and quivering pain the pure perfection her marred nature needs. Ask any human being, what do you want? Perfection. We may define it differently. Perfection. Perfection of joy. It never changes into sorrow. Perfection of love. There is no bitterness, quarrel. Love story doesn't change into hate story. Perfection of knowledge. No error. Everything we want, basically perfection. But we have been told it's not possible. Therefore, we do all that, you know.
We are, after all, human.
Humans. Several logic and examples people give.
And then they spoil the whole
thing. They spoil the whole thing. The scientists will tell us this is your limit. And the yogis will also tell us this is your limit. So this is the problem. But she refuses to give up. She seeks perfection. Even today, if you ask, even the most, I have actually questioned sages who are seeking mukti. Supposing this world becomes a perfect place, would you still seek mukti? Then their answer is, no, it's not possible. I said, no, I'm not asking whether it's possible. That's, will you still seek? Mute. Mute. Basically, we want perfection. And see, he connects it with everybody's aspiration. So she seeks the pure perfection, not just a perfection that today it's fine. Oh, what a wonderful, perfect life I have. But tomorrow you are sick and tired. No. Pure perfection, the divine perfection. A breath of Godhead on her stone and mire. This material body should become the body of God. A faith she craves that can survive defeat, the sweetness of a love that knows not death, the radiance of a truth forever sure. This is what she is seeking. A truth which carries the certitude that yes, that's how it is. A love that doesn't change into bitterness. All these earth is seeking. So this is what is described, and toward the end, Shobindo now gives his final remarks. Like you take it to the Prime Minister and he'll say, okay, final sanction or not sanction. So last four lines from below on this page. What most she needs, what most exceeds her scope. Looks like this is impossible. AI is possible, but DI is not possible.
What is
DI? Divine intelligence. Intelligence. Our intelligence cannot be upgraded. So we talk about AI. A mind. So what is he seeking which seems impossible? A mind unvisited by illusions gleams. What are illusions? Looks like truth, but it changes. Oh, no, I made a mistake. So it doesn't want that. It wants a mind which knows the truth. A will expressive of soul's deity. So omniscience and omnipotence, practically. A strength not forced to stumble by its speed. So vital power is like that. That's why mother says you must mistrust the vital. It starts running. I'll get it. Oh, it's so near. I got it. And then it loses it. It stumbles. Because the thing escapes. A joy that drags not sorrow as its shade. That's not what we want. A joy which is... That is the true non-duality. Non-duality is not a vacant concept beyond happiness. Non-duality is the divine nature, which is missed by the modern interpreters. Oh, we are above sin and evil. We are above joy and sorrow. So they become like, you know, masks. That's not what is non-duality. Non-duality is you get out of this nature, and if you can discover the divine nature, which is always full of joy, always full of sweetness, strength. But of course, to bring it into material nature as a permanent, that's the next step. For these she yearns and feels them destined hers. That's why you may have millions of people who talk about moksha. But man will still remain connected to earth. Oh, you can have people go to Mahakum, come back, and they will still very much in earth they want. They won't say, okay, now my sins are over, I have moksha, forget about everything. Because it's just not possible. See, as long as we have this body, we have this aspiration, it troubles, torments man. And yet it is the core of, you know, if you go behind the torment and the trouble, there is the aspiration of the soul. Now comes to Sri Aurobindo. What do you say, sir? Your final words. Heaven's privilege she claims as her own right. We are not happy. There are gods in heaven who are enjoying cloud nine music. We want to express it here. Just is her claim. The all witnessing gods approve. Now gods with a capital G. So these are the highest gods in the supramental, and you know, they say yes, yes. What you are seeking is right. Clear in a greater light than reason owns. Our intuitions are its title deeds. The fact that we want these things intuitively is itself a sign that they are going to be. So then comes these marvelous lines. Our souls accept what our blind thoughts refuse. Earth's winged chimeras are truth's steeds in heaven. Uchchaisrava. Imagination. Uchchaisravas goes to the titans. It's very interesting. And normally you would say, oh, these are imaginations, supramental rays. So winged chimera, chimera literally, it doesn't exist. But he says they are truth steed. Heaven has inspired us to imagine all these things. Earth's winged chimeras are truth's steeds in heaven. Winged chimeras. See, chimera is a... imaginary reality. It doesn't exist. We use the word that, you know, you are imagining too much. People in Pondicherry, they are some probably, I don't know. They don't take cannabis, but what do they take? They eat some lotus. So they ask sometimes. I say, we eat lotus drinks. Literally, you have lotus drinks, by the way. We eat lotus drink. So what happens with the lotus drink? This is how we look at life. So, these people are all talking of supramental rays, luminous body, divine body, all this is nonsense. So, chimera. All of us go through it. So, earth's winged chimeras. People on earth will call them chimeras. Hawa Hawaii, if you want a Hindi word. Hawa Hawaii. But Sri Aurobindo is saying everything that the earth has ever imagined is a possibility. So when people often ask that did Pushpak Viman existed or not, I say, look here, somebody even conceived of it. Is it a joke? How did he conceive that machines can fly? And if you read the description, it is so accurate. It actually describes when it came, there was a lot of noise and the grass used to go all around. This is a description. Even if it didn't exist, hats off to the person who, Rishi, who conceived it. Da Vinci also conceived Sri Aurobindo's own vibhuti. Reality, no? Yes. So, but that time, even as late as when the Wright brothers were inventing the plane, the Orthodox Church, what did it say?
They laughed at it.
They would have executed him thanks to Voltaire and all this Renaissance. They won't do that. Otherwise, if it was Galileo time, Wright brothers would have been put in prison. Oh, he wants to do something which God didn't do because God has finished all his actions.
Socrates.
6 days.
Socrates was also
6 days, action is over. So now you don't have scope of doing all these things which last 100 years we see coming up. So suddenly when Wright brothers, so I think his father was a priest also and he's talking of nonsense. But that day when the aircraft flew, see Icarus and Daedalus story, Greek story, they have also imagined, Jatayu, Sampati, Hanuman, all these seem like imagination. The people said the imagination, it flew some 100 meters. But today we are in space age. Yes, it opens a door. So what we call as even now movies have come like that, Cocoon, which speaks about a body of light.
Oh.
Yeah. Being so, Steven Spielberg, who actually came to Ashram and Auroville. Yeah. The man who made all this Schindler's List, Indiana Jones, lovely Cup of Christ, all that. So when you look at it, we think they are imaginations. Maybe they are far ahead of its times. Hanuman actually flying to touch the sun may be far ahead of its times. But if somebody has conceived it, it is possible one day. So that's where the difference is. Earth's winged chimeras are truth's steeds in heaven. The impossible, God's sign of things to be. Why? Because you have conceived. Then only you say impossible. What you have never conceived cannot be. It's only after you have conceived that people will say it is impossible. But you have conceived it. So if you have conceived it, one day the baby will be delivered. So that's how the whole process goes. So it's beautiful. And then of course, the whole process of destiny very beautifully that we don't understand. He says, but few can look beyond. Sri Aurobindo was a Trikaldarshi, so he could see. So he says, I know. You people will say you couldn't see. I understand it. So you have... But few can look beyond the present state or overleap the matted hedge of senses. We are only glued to what the senses are showing us. All that transpires on earth and all beyond are parts of an illimitable plan. The one keeps in his heart and knows alone. Our outward happenings have their seed within. They get distorted on the surface, but they have a truth inside. This, and even this random fate that imitates chance, there is nothing like chance. It looks random, but it's not random. Only we don't know the clue. Chance is a word we use for hiding our ignorance, basically.
This world was not
big. Yeah. This mass of unintelligible results are the dumb graph of truths that work unseen. The laws of the unknown create the known. The events that shape the appearance of our lives are a cipher of subliminal quiverings which rarely we surprise or vaguely feel, are an outcome of suppressed realities that hardly rise into material day. So all that we look at outside, it looks like chance. See how all of us are meeting here.
But it's decided.
Long back.
Aeons back.
Yes. Everything. This part of a graph. We don't know the secret clue. And yet things happen. So then he describes that how we can also have access to this. Passingly he describes, but he says that how, what an ignorance we are living in. I don't know, time is so short and I didn't feel like skipping. So let me at least come to this very reassuring passage, because then we can have some question answers and some other time. I know, Savitri and
getting in there.
Savitri is like you. Savitri is like that. I could continue for hours, but you know. So, page 55, after describing all this, this is a great destiny, Biki to earth, man is going to transcend himself, all this he describes. Then he gives that future. We see the darkness, Shobindu is showing us the light. Thus will the masked transcendent mount his throne. God is hidden in the world. He is the transcendent, masked by the coverings of ignorance. But he is not here to run away. Just imagine what we have made him to be. There is God within, but you run away. Poor God, you know, some respect for his omnipotence, omniscience. So when will he come? Will there be an announcement? Will there be some, God is coming, he is going to mount his throne, all that is meant for sadhus, sannyasis and the kings. God doesn't work like that. He comes unseen, unsuspectingly, and occupies the throne of our heart. And we don't even know. Suddenly we wake up, who are you? I'm God. And life changes. So see, when darkness deepens, strangling the earth's breast. See, Adhi Raat Prabhu Darshan Denge Preman Adhi Ketira. And you also see it in Shri Krishna's story. In Sri Rama's story, Sri Aurobindo's story, when there is total darkness, we can't even imagine what it was 120 years back, India and the world, how everything has changed, when darkness deepens, and to what extent? Strangling the earth's breast, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp. This was called as enlightenment. Sorry to say, but entire, when they speak of age of enlightenment, I ask them what kind of light you had, mental light. So, you know, that's hardly any light. So, and man's corporeal mind is the only lamp. How does God come? As a thief in the night shall be the covert tread of one who steps unseen into his house. This is his house. So, sometimes people ask, what do you get in Pondicherry? What do you get? So one of the things I say is, depending on the mood, I say actually, we lose whatever we had. Huh? How? I said, it's stolen. What is stolen? Hearts are stolen. Minds are stolen. We can't find it anymore. That's what is there in one of those, no? Ki chhap tilak, sab chini mose naina milai ke. That really means that all our false identities are snatched away when God comes. You can't anymore keep that. And it's so difficult after that. In fact, it's impossible to connect with that kind of a false identity. So he comes like a thief. But basically a thief who's actually the house is his. But we are the ones, the ego is sitting saying, I am the one. So then he comes, he says, who? It's not yours. So see, Krishna's story comes to mind. A voice ill heard shall speak, the soul obey. Even now, you see Sri Aurobindo's word. Very few people are, you know, ready even to listen. But the soul obeys. There are those who have not read Sri Aurobindo. Not read much. Or really, I don't know. How much you have read? You are just about 18, few months you have been reading. 1 year. See? Why they are here? Something within obeys. A voice ill heard shall speak. The soul obeys. One doesn't know why. It's everybody's story. A power into mind's inner chamber steal. Now, what a wonderful line. A charm and sweetness open life's closed doors. Aren't we living because this suffering is because we don't have experienced that charm and sweetness within. So we want to buy it or get it from outside.
So on the 21st, the doors will open.
Doors will open, that's right. So beautiful. Charm and sweetness. Open life's closed doors. And that's your reminder also, you have to send to nature. And what will conquer this world? And beauty conquer the resisting world. Can we imagine? beauty we have shunned. It is a snare. But see, Krishna is Madhuram Madhuram. Even when you read the description of Lord Rama in Sri Ramachandra Kripala Bhajman Haran Bhavve Dharunam Nav Kanja Lochan Kanja Mukhkar Kanja Pad Kanja Arunam, everything is beautiful about the divine. Only to himself. So that beauty of the divine, it's impossible for anything crude, anything ugly, anything which is cruel to remain in the presence of the divine. That's the story of Mahishasura and Mahishasur Mardini. Mahishasura wants to marry Durga because she is the most beautiful celestial woman ever. Durga doesn't say no. She says, defeat me in a combat. She doesn't say no. So he's a fool. He doesn't understand the bait. The only way is to surrender. Same thing happens with Ravan. The only way, when the divine beauty manifests, is surrender. If you don't, you will be finished. Everything that you call as yourself is finished. That's why in the Mahishasura story, since we are at it, many people don't know what is the end of the story. End of the story is not Mahishasura's death that takes place. But something else happens. No, something else. Mahishasura prays. Before she is going to give the final blow, she says, now I know I am going to die. But join me to you forever. He surrenders. So Durga gives him that boon. That's why in all the Durga Puja Pandal, you will see Mahishasura also. He becomes the devotee of Durga. So it is the story of conversion of the Asura. Conversion, at least, you know, he becomes a devotee of Durga. It's not a transformation, but it's a conversion, which is the first step. Asura has to first get converted. Even Ravan's story is that, but here in typical celebrations of Lord Ram, you don't see Ravan. He's burnt, destroyed. But in all Durga Puja Pandals, you will see Mahishasura along with. He is converted.
Together only, no? She's standing on the journey.
He says, so she grants him that. Why? Because now she is beauty, but that beauty is a power. Only thing it, you have to surrender completely. And this was the origin of many of the tantric things. Jayadev's famous Kriti, suddenly the name is going off from my head, where Shri Krishna goes, Gita Govindam, where he goes and surrenders to Radha and literally prays to her. All this, that celestial, the divine beauty, she has the power to transform you. So beauty conquered the resisting world. The truth light capture nature by surprise. His stealth of God compel the heart to bliss. Always struggling with little joy, little happiness. After some time you forget what pain is, what sorrow is, what suffering is. Strange. And people feel, what is it? What's gone wrong with you? Now things are right with us. So, the stealth of God compels the heart to bliss and earth grow unexpectedly divine. And then he describes the whole process. In matter shall be lit the spirit's glow. Matter is this body. In body and body kindle the sacred birth. The awakening of aspiration in those whom the divine chooses. It doesn't go by any logical understanding. Like sometime back we were saying, their mother, all this is not important. Just imagine, in UK, London, I know, there are so many people going to the mandir and doing all this, puja, reading all the Bhagavatam and all this. Why suddenly these people, two people get touched? And this story of many, many others. That because in body and bodies kindle the sacred birth. This fire of aspiration is lit. Outer excuses are different. Night shall awake to the anthem of the stars. What we call as night, darkness. There will be such a divine guidance through it. It will carry its own charm and joy. The days become a happy pilgrim march. Our will a force of the eternal's power. And thought the rays of a spiritual sun. And the final four lines A few shall see what none yet understands. A few shall see what none yet understands. It doesn't matter. People often say that we don't understand. Don't worry. A few shall see what none yet understands. God shall grow up while the wise men talk and sleep.
God within.
Yes, he is destined to grow. He will bring all that is needed. The understanding comes. That's how Mother has said. It will spring up from within. Because only when you grow up can you understand. Even in everyday life, after all, when children don't understand parents and others, what do parents say when you grow up?
You will
akal aayegi. When you become a mom, you'll understand how a mom feels. So growing up, so when God grows in us, then we understand the ways of God, we understand creation, we understand ourselves. For man shall not know the coming till its hour. We'll probably be debating till maybe last few days when suddenly there'll be an outbreak of a new species here and there. Suddenly newspapers, people say, "Arey, there was a luminous being there, a few of them. Oh my God, suddenly this fellow refused to die, stopped dying." I mean, all these reported people won't know how. This turning point will come, something like that. Just as human beings evolved out of animal world, something like that. In islets, Yobindo describes that in the Life Divine. For man shall not know the coming till its hour, and belief shall be not till the work is done. I know, I wish.
It's very, very in process.
Let's see whenever next we'll carry on from here.
But that's what you said in the nursing home 5 years
back. Well, we have carried on. Nursing home was only first two cantos.
Yes.
So you see, now see, we are on fourth canto. Very good. Apne aap, see, it has continued. No, no, I don't remember. I remember this. Okay.
This too, yeah.
So.
How are you?
Okay, so what's the program?
The program is to have China, sir. Little, very little.
Okay, so we'll stop here.